Elise says, this has been a real difficult class because we aren't supposed to really add to anything to what it says in the book of Revelation. And we even looked at a few cross-references last night, and they said, are we supposed to do that? So, well, she didn't say exactly we couldn't use the Bible, I don't think, but maybe we won't even do that today. So we'll just go through what it says. But let's look back a little bit and see what chapter 16 says, because chapter 16, of course, leads into chapter 17, doesn't it? What is going on in chapter 16 of Revelation? Okay, we have the bulls, don't we? What is the sequence of judgment? What's the first thing we saw? Okay, the seals were opened. And out of the seventh seal came what? Okay, the seven trumpets. And out of the seventh trumpet came the bulls, the seven bulls. And they're all, though, under the umbrella of the seals, aren't they? Because when the seventh seal is opened, it's all complete, isn't it, basically? Because it's all under those seven seals. So here we have the seven bulls, and they are poured out in chapter 16. And what do we see about the bulls when they're poured out? Compared to, say, the trumpets.
They're called the wrath of God.
Okay, they're the bulls of the wrath of God. They contain the wrath of God, don't they? And when they're poured out, what kind of effect do they have? Okay, it's more of a devastating effect. We saw the trumpets. How the trumpets affect the earth? What was the... Okay. It was a third and a third and a third. It wasn't the entire complete destruction, was it? But what do we see about the bowls? Okay. Okay. It's more of a complete destruction. All right. And then what do we see at the end of chapter 16? Well, when the sixth angel poured out his bowl, what happened? Okay, but first it was what? The Euphrates River was dried up. And it was dried up for what purpose? Okay, it made a highway. Think of a big dry riverbed. It's going to make a highway for the kings from the east to come. And they're being gathered by these unclean spirits to come where? Okay, to Armageddon for what? What's the event they're all gathering together for? Okay. Yeah, it's the war of the great day of God the Almighty. And so we all know about Armageddon. We've heard about it, and it's the big grand finale, isn't it? So when the river's dried up and makes the way for all of them to come, and the evil spirits are sent out, and they deceive the kings to bring them there. And then after that, the seventh bowl is poured out, and what happens? What do we hear? Okay, it is done. And we know that in the seventh, when the bowls are poured out, they are the what? They're the last, aren't they? And so when the seventh one is poured out, the loud voice comes from where? The throne. And it says, it is done. And when those words go out, what happens? Yeah. Yes, yeah, so it's devastating, the lightning and the thunder and the earthquake, the great earthquake. What kind of earthquake was it?
Cataclysmic.
Yeah, like no earthquake ever before. You think of the very worst earthquake we've ever had, and it was way worse than that. And when the earthquake hit, what happened? Okay, the great city was split into three parts, and the cities of the nations all fell. And then who was remembered? Okay, Babylon the Great was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of his fierce wrath. And so we're going to see kind of the telescope going in on that event, aren't we, as we look at chapters 17 and 18. We're going to see what God's wrath looks like on Babylon and why. And so you made your chart on Babylon and added a lot of information about her, didn't you, this week? So let's see what we see about Babylon in chapter 17. And one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and spoke with me, saying, come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters. So what's the first thing we see about her? What is she called?
Harlot.
The great harlot. great harlot. Now, what is harlotry in the Old Testament particularly usually referred to? Okay, it's spiritual, isn't it? It's a spiritual idolatry, and an idolatrous woman who has turned her back on God and followed other gods is idolatry. Okay, and she does what? Where is she? Who is she sitting on? Many waters. Okay, keep that in your mind because we're going to find out what the many waters are. And then it goes on to describe her more by saying what in verse 2? Okay, the kings of the earth did what with her? Okay, they committed immorality with her. Now, if you think about it being she's idolatrous, it's got some kind of a religious overtone, what would it mean for the kings of the earth to commit adultery or immorality with her? What kind of involvement did she have?
You're probably worshiping her, not Christ.
Well, it says that she is this idolatrous harlot, and the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality with her. So what kind of involvement did she have with the kings of the earth? Yeah.
A false religion.
Okay. Okay, so she's mixed up with the governments, isn't she? She somehow, as a religious entity, is mixed up with governments in a bad way. And those who dwell on the earth, now who are those? The earth dwellers, right? Okay. Were made drunk with the wine of her immorality. So her influence is great, isn't it? Because she sits on what? Many waters. So she has a great influence both in the government and with the people. Okay, that's the beginning of our information about Babylon. And he carried me...
Also, the immorality makes me think that it was kind of a... They were still with Christ, but they were going back and forth, kind of. They didn't say they totally left their religion, but being immoral, just, you know, that's just a... insight that I probably shouldn't take, but
so yeah, that's a good one.
But also says that the waters represent nations too.
Right at the end of this chapter, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and what did he see? Okay, it's a woman. First of all, the woman, the harlot. And she's sitting on a what?
Scarlet beast.
And the scarlet beast kind of is identified by telling you what about the scarlet beast? Okay. Okay, so the beast that she's sitting on is full of blasphemous names and has 7 heads and 10 horns. Now, where did we see this beast before? Okay, chapter 13. And we saw the beast coming up out of what? Okay, out of the sea. The dragon was watching him, and up came the beast. And so now we have the beast, and he's got a rider now, doesn't he? So what does the fact that she's riding this beast indicate about her and the beast? Okay, right. She controls him, but he supports her because she's riding the beast, and she's holding the reins, right? Now, what do we see about the woman in verse 4? How's she described? Okay, she's clothed in... Okay, purple and scarlet, first of all. And what are purple and scarlet? When you think of those two fabrics, what are they? Royalty, right. These are really rich, rich fabrics, and it's a symbol of royalty. She's clothed in purple and scarlet. And what's she adorned with? Okay. A lot of wealth there, isn't there? She's got the clothes, and she's got the jewelry. She's got everything. And then what does she have in her hand? Okay, she's holding that gold cup in her hand, and it's full of abominations, and of unclean things, and of her immorality. So what kind of a picture do you get of her as you think about this?
She's attractive.
Attractive?
Okay. From the outside. I mean, she's pretty to look at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's that?
Just from the outside, she looks...
And there's an amount of decadence to her, isn't there? You get the idea of decadence. What's written on her forehead? Okay, it's a mystery. First of all, it's a mystery. Now, mysteries in the Bible are something that God does reveal to us. So it's a mystery, but something that we can't understand. And it's on her forehead. Who else had names written on their forehead or had something written on their forehead? Okay, those who took the mark of the beast, it could be on their forehead or on their hand. Who else? 144,000 had his name written on their foreheads. They're sealed on their foreheads. Who else are we going to see with something on their foreheads? The saints. In the end, it says, when we see him, we're going to have what? His name on our foreheads. That's why we have those little billboards up there, I guess. The whole, you know. But there's a lot talked about. I went through and looked at the foreheads and see who. On his forehead. Right, on his forehead. So what is that? It's an identification mark, isn't it? It identifies. And what was written on her forehead? She had that mystery. What was it? Okay. So it's identifying who she is. She is Babylon the Great. She is the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. So if you think about all of the spiritual harlotry that's gone on, all the abominations of the earth, who is the mother of this? Right, Babylon the Great. So it's talking about origin. You know, we talk about, you know, I'm a mother and I have 10 children. They originated with me, right? So this is kind of going back and identifying that she is the originator of all of this harlotry and abominations that are on the earth now. And all of the abominations, all of the unclean things. Yeah.
If she is sitting on the beast, are we to believe that she is in control?
I think
she's
so.
She's more in control than the beast is.
I think at this point, she's holding the reins. Okay. He has the power. The horse has the power. You know, you think about the rider. The rider controls, but the power and the, yeah, I think.
And that's why they have to get rid of her.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So, we know who she is. She is the mother of all of the abominations of the earth and of harlotry. Then he saw the woman, what? Drunk with the blood of the saints and? Okay, with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus, and he wondered when he saw her. So she was drunk, and we talked about that. What does that indicate? Okay, out of control, that bloodlust that she, you know, more and more and more, she was drunk with it. He was curious when he saw her, wasn't he? And the angel said to me, "Why do you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns." So the mystery is going to be revealed in something that's real simple to understand, right? Right, okay. Now, the beast that you saw was, and is not, the time when it was gone, and is what? And go to, so it gives kind of the whole history of the beast, right? It was, but now then it wasn't, and now it's going to come out of the abyss, and then it's going to go to destruction. And those who dwell on the earth, whose names has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will do what? Okay, they'll wonder when they see the beast that he was and is not and will come. Okay, so there's going to be a certain amount of awe inspired by this beast because he's going to be an entity that was around before and then he disappeared for a while and then he's back and they're all going to wonder after him. But it's only those who what? Okay, only those whose names are not written in the book of life that are going to even wonder about him. Now here's the mind that has wisdom. The 7 heads are what? Okay, the seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And they are what?
Seven kings.
Seven kings. Now he's going to give you the history of the kings. What does he say? Okay, so it's talking about an empire of some kind, isn't it? That there's all these kings, five have already been and gone. One is now, and the other has not come, but when he comes, he must stay for how long?
A little while.
Just a little while. His time is going to be short. Now the beast which was and is not, so the beast that we saw, the one that was, is not, is coming out of the beast, is himself what?
An eighth.
And is one of the
seven.
See how he's revealing the mystery to us that we can understand all of this? And he goes to where? Okay, he's the one that's going to destruction. Now, I think that next year when we look at the book of Daniel again and we put this together with what we learned in Daniel, that it will make sense. It will. We will understand this a lot more. Now, the ten horns that you saw are what?
Ten kings.
Think about the statue, right? The little toe, all those ten toes on the statue? Okay, there are ten kings who have not yet received what?
A kingdom.
So they're in the future, aren't they? There are ten kings that are going to be a kingdom, but they haven't received their kingdom yet. But they will receive authority as kings with the beast for how long?
An hour.
For 1 hour. So their reign is going to be short, isn't it? Do you have a question?
No, I'm just thinking about that. I'm thinking about the silence for a half an hour, and now we have the beast has received authority for 1 hour. I wonder if there's any...
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it means exactly 1 hour. I think it's a short amount of time here. I don't think it's saying that it's like exactly 1 hour. I think it'll be a little period of time. But it's going to be a short period of time. They're only going to be have authority for a short period of time. But they have a purpose, don't they? What is their purpose? Okay. Their purpose is, as they are raised up to be kings, their purpose is to give all of their power and all of their authority to who? To the beast. That is their purpose. Now, they're going to wage war against who? Okay, against the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them because he is Lord of Lords and King of Kings, and those who are with him are called the Chosen and the Faithful. So he's going to, when he comes, is it talking about perhaps when he comes back and he's leading the host behind him, the army behind him, right? Those who are with him are the called and the chosen and the faithful. So we see that the woman riding this beast, the beast is who? Well, it's the dragon is Satan. Who's the beast? Okay, it's that Antichrist and the government that comes up out of the seas, and she has control over them. And the whole purpose of them is to give their authority to the beast. And we know that God is going to overcome them, isn't he? The Lord is going to overcome them. So we have that confidence that as bad as it looks, he's going to overcome them. Now, the ten horns that you saw, oops, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are what? Okay, so she has influence and over everybody, doesn't she? She has influence over the peoples, the multitudes of the nations and the tongues, and we know over the kings of the earth because they have a relationship with her, don't they? So she is one that has great authority from one end of the world to the other. It's not like there's nobody that's left out of her influence. She has broad influence. And the ten horns which you saw... and the beast, these will do what? Okay, right now she's riding that beast, but there's going to come a time when they are going to turn on her and they're going to hate her. They're going to hate the harlot. And what are they going to do when they hate her? Okay, she's going to be destroyed by them, isn't she? She is going to be absolutely destroyed. Why is she going to be destroyed? Okay. We see right there in that in chapter 17 that God has put it in their hearts to execute his purpose by what? Okay, for by having a common purpose. And what is their common purpose going to be? Okay. By giving their kingdom to the beast. So they're going to capitulate to him, and then they're going to destroy her, so that everything goes to the beast, doesn't it? Everything will belong to the beast. Until when? Okay. Until the words of God will be fulfilled. And so who do we see that is sovereign over all of this? Okay, God. And we see that it is his purpose for all these things to take place. Yeah.
Reminds me, too, that he can use bad people, bad things for his purpose. Mm-hmm. I think it was just the good people are used, you know. But no, he could definitely use the bad for his purpose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I was looking up some chapters in Jeremiah and Isaiah this yesterday, thinking about Babylon and what has been said about her in the past. And it's all this that God, you know, that God used, of course, Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar. He used her, didn't he? She was the hammer of the whole earth. He used her, but what did he say? After I've used you, what is he going to do to her? Judge her because she went too far. You know, she didn't do it according to, and same with Assyria and same with all the other nations that he used as his correct rod of correction against Israel. They all did it too far, and so judgment is coming to all of them. And so God uses who he uses, but then he disciplines and punishes the ones he uses.
It's interesting to see how Babylon shows up so many times in Scripture, and if we're not into the context of how it's being used, then we can get real confused on mm-hmm. the meaning of Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar and mm-hmm, Babylon mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. Revelation mm-hmm. and Babel. And
but it's all part of the same thing, isn't it?
It is, but the context mm-hmm. is so different to help us see how the puzzle fits together.
Well, remember when we studied Jeremiah and we looked at the two chapters, 50 and 51, on the judgment of Babylon, and we said it told us that there would be a complete destruction of Babylon, that Babylon would be destroyed just like Sodom and Gomorrah. There would be nothing left. But when the Medes and the Persians took Babylon over, did they destroy Babylon?
No.
No. How did they take it over? Remember? Yeah. They came in, they found a way through the water supply to come in under the city, and they just took it over. And so we talked about the fact that the judgment that is talked about in Jeremiah, and then we see it again in Isaiah, it wasn't completed then. There was something that was to be in the future. And so if you go back and you read, you could do that this week, go back and read Jeremiah chapter 50, 51, and a lot of the same words come up in this chapter, a lot of the same phraseology. It's all the same. You know, flee from her, the cup of his wrath going to Babylon. I mean, it's all part and parcel of the same prophecy. And so we talk about Revelation not being anything new, that everything has already been showed us in the Old Testament and the New.
The first year doing precept at College Park, we did Daniel when I was a first year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 2004 when America was marching into that territory of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And the question came from my husband, is Babylon still alive? So we set out on a quest. Find out. And
it is.
Yes.
Never destroyed
yet.
Nope. Not destroyed yet.
94 or 2004, whenever.
Uh-huh.
No.
Yeah.
Not
yet.
God's going to be the one.
Mm-hmm.
So Babylon finally gets destroyed here.
Mm-hmm.
At the end.
But I think as we go along, we'll understand what the fullness of Babylon is. It's not just merely a city. It's not merely a religious system. There's something significant about what is encompassed from the very beginning all the way through. And I think we'll see that, I hope, we dig into all that. You know, I was thinking about this last night listening to Kay, is that they wrote the Revelation study and the Daniel study before they wrote any of the studies that we've done over this past 10 years, Samuel and Jeremiah and Isaiah and the minor prophets. And so there's a lot of things she doesn't connect together because we have the benefit of all that they've done, you know, since then. Because those the tapes that we watch are 26 years old, I think. They're quite old. Anyway. So let's look at chapter 18. So we see the woman you saw is what? Okay, she's a great city. And what's her influence? Okay, she reigns over the kings of the earth. And so we see that she's not just a system, but she's also a city. So there's two aspects to her. Now, after these things, there's another time phrase you can mark. After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illumined with his glory. So we get the picture of this mighty angel and the beauty of him and his illumination, his glory. And what is he crying out with his mighty voice? Okay, so the fact that Babylon has fallen is worthy, the announcement is worthy of this particularly mighty, glorious angel to come and make this big announcement. This is a big deal. She has fallen. It says she has become what? Okay. Yeah, you get the feeling there's a lot of demonic activity going on here, don't you?
What do you think this is in contrast to the verse 4 in the previous chapter, where when she falls, all of her beauty is stripped away and you see her for what she is?
Could be.
Because you go, I mean, that's a pretty stark contrast. You have clothed in scarlet and precious jewels, and all of a sudden, when she falls, she's a dwelling place for demons and every unclean spirit and every unclean and hateful bird and animal.
Of course, you know that her cup is full of all that garbage, so here it is. Yes, she's not a beautiful woman. For all the nations have done what? Okay, once again, showing the worldwide influence of this woman. All the nations have drunk of the wine and the passion of her immorality. And the kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her. So once again, we're seeing that she has got great influence with the governments and with the people. And with who? Okay, the merchants have become wealthy from her trade. They have been made rich by her, by the wealth of her sensuality. So all that she loves, all the scarlet and the purple and the gold and the jewels, and all that have made everyone else rich. I heard another voice from heaven saying what? Okay, the call is to come out of her, my people, so that what? Okay, so you will not participate in her sins and receive of her plagues. And Jeremiah 51 says the exact same thing, I think, twice. They're to come out of her, come out of her. For her sins have piled up how high?
As high as heaven.
As high as heaven. Think about the Tower of Babel. What did they do? Yeah, they piled it up to heaven, didn't they? They piled it up to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. And so it goes all the way back to the Tower of Babel. And what does he tell, what does he say in verse 6? How is she to be paid back?
Double.
Double, right? Double according to her deeds in the cup which she has mixed. Mixed twice as much for her. So in the cup that she's... Now, what has she done? What has she done over the years? Okay, the blood of the saints and the martyrs. So she's getting twice the dose that she herself poured out.
So how is this not unjust? Because in the Old Testament law, you weren't allowed to take more than what you were... Like, is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth? Like, so how is this justice to pay her back a double?
Yeah, Marla.
The point of the Levitical law was to limit what somebody might do. It wasn't a one for. It wasn't a equal. It wasn't actually justice. It wasn't complete. It was just meant to limit people. And God's justice is so pure and so so complete. Doing what needs to be done. It's not the same rules that were applied.
people weren't to take vengeance, were they?
No.
Who has vengeance?
God.
God does. It's his, and they're to wait. Vengeance is his. He's the one who repays. It's not our job to do that.
Well, when we sin against somebody else, we're sinning against two. We're sinning against that person, and we're also sinning against God. Mm-hmm. So maybe that has the double.
We can't hear.
I'm sorry, double. When we sin against somebody, we're sinning against one that person, but we're also sinning against God. So that would be double sin, double. I
also think they deserve it. I don't have the reference.
When the blood is given them to drink, they poured out, they deserve it. And I'm sure the same with Babylon.
It has to be that way because God's the only one that knows the heart. And he can only judge right based on that.
Well, shall not the judge of the whole earth do right? Yes, right? So it doesn't make sense to us, but yes, she's going to get double for what she herself did to the degree that she glorified herself. So we know that she's one who has exalted herself, which gives you the idea of what? What's this? Pride. Pride, right? And live sensuously to the same degree, give her torment and mourning. For she says in her heart, what? What does she say as her heart? Yes. Does she expect that she will ever be judged?
No.
No, she is the queen, and she is the queen of what? In her opinion, of everything. She's the queen not only of the earth, but of heaven, right? She is the queen, and she will never herself be judged. She will never see mourning. And we see that, I think, in Jeremiah 2 that says that as well. So, and what do we know? How does God look at pride? Yeah, pride. What was the sin of Satan?
Pride.
Those I wills. I will raise my throne up. I will become like God. And God said, out. What would we see about Edom when they sat up there on their mountain? What'd they say? Who can ever get us, right? Nobody can ever get us. And God said, I will bring you down. You might think you're unapproachable and there's no one that can touch you, but God will do it. And so for this reason, because she said these things, in one day her plagues will come, pestilence and mourning and famine, and she'll be burned up with fire, for the Lord who judges her is what?
Strong.
Is strong. She says it will never happen, but God is strong, and he is the one who judges. And the kings of the earth who committed acts of immorality and lived sensuously with her, what are they going to do when they see her burning? They're going to weep and they're going to lament when they see the smoke of her burning because, what does it say? They live sensuously with her. They had a relationship with her. But how? Are they going to come up close?
No.
No. But if you think of Sodom and Gomorrah, which is kind of a similar in Jeremiah, it says she's going to be like Sodom and like Gomorrah. Would it be possible to come up close? No. It's going to be a big, hot, burning mass. Staying at the distance because of her fear, the fear of her torment, say, woe, woe, the great city, Babylon, the what?
Strong city.
But what do we see about the God who judges her?
He's strong, right?
For in 1 hour, your judgment has come. So it's going to be, what kind of a judgment is it going to be?
Quick.
It's going to be quick. It's going to be an instantaneous judgment. It's going to be something that happens very quickly. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her. Why? Right. All those things that she consumed are not going to be bought anymore. And so there's going to be the financial difficulties. Although we know we're getting to the end of things. There won't be too much time for this to be a problem, right? So what kind of cargoes did she have? Okay, the first line is pretty much what she wore, wasn't it?
Right.
It was the scarlet and the purple and the linen under that and the precious stones, the pearls, the silk, and every kind of citron wood. So what would she have used the citron wood for, we wonder? And every article of ivory and every article made from very costly wood and bronze and iron and marble. Boy, this is so descriptive, isn't it? And cinnamon and spice and incense and perfume and frankincense and wine and olive oil and fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and cargoes of horses and chariots and what? slaves and human lives. Human souls are bought and sold by this Babylon. It's pretty descriptive. I wish we could talk about this more, but we really are not allowed to say anything about this.
We won't tell.
The fruit you long for has gone from you, and all the things that were luxurious and splendid have passed away from you, and men will no longer find them. Now the merchants of these things who became rich from her will stand at a distance because of the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning, saying what? Whoa. The great city, she who was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls. For in 1 hour such great wealth has been laid waste. And every shipmaster, every passenger and sailor, and as many as make their living by the sea stood at a distance and were crying out as they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like the great city? And they threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth. For in 1 hour she's been laid waste. So what is going to be the response of the earth dwellers when they see this destruction of Babylon?
They mourn over that and not their sin.
Isn't that interesting? Right, isn't that they mourn over the passing of Babylon, but not for their own sin, because what is tied up with Babylon for all of these that are listed? Yeah, their wealth, their affluence, all their earthly pleasures are tied up with her. She's a very lucrative partner, isn't she?
I wonder if this whoa every time has anything to do with the double portion of.
Not just woe, that's a two times woe. Yeah, well, that's true, because we had the three woes being significant before, so it could be, yeah. So, yes, they are mourning and weeping over her and throwing dust on their heads and crying out. But in verse 20 it says, rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because why? Okay, so the earth dwellers mourn over her, but the heaven and the saints and all the apostles and prophets are to rejoice at her destruction, because what has God done in judging Babylon? He's avenged the blood. He has avenged, hasn't he? God has pronounced judgment on behalf of them on her. Then a strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone, threw it into the sea, saying, so will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and not be found any longer. And the sound of harpists and musicians and flute players and trumpeters will not be heard in you any longer, and no craftsman of any craft will be found in you any longer. And the sound of a mill will not be heard in you any longer, and the light of a lamp will not shine in you any longer, and the voice of the bridegroom and the bride will not be heard in you any longer. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, because all the nations were deceived by your sorcery. So, what kind of a judgment will her judgment be? It'll be complete. There will be no carrying on after that. There's not going to be any more weddings, no more work. Nothing is going to be, there's going to be no more normal anything in Babylon. And we saw that for a while with the destruction of Jerusalem, didn't we? We studied Jeremiah, that all those things are going to come upon, we're going to come upon Jerusalem at that time, that no more normal day-to-day life there. But when we found out why all this is coming upon Babylon in verse 24, what does it say? Okay, so in her has been found the blood of the prophets and the saints and all who have been slain on the earth. So what kind of an entity is this? You know, we think about Babylon being destroyed and the fact that this is like the crown of God's judgment, isn't it, really, this destruction of Babylon. What is it about her that is so bad? She can't be something that just pops up overnight, you know, during the tribulation, that there's all of a sudden this Babylon that comes up. What could she possibly be?
Pridefulness?
Well, there is that in her.
culmination of all the, all the, you know, decades.
Statue,
yeah.
Which is rolled on down.
It's the rebellion and building.
So would that be like going back to the whole system?
Go ahead.
All of time, like not just Hitler and all against it, you know, just all of time. Babylon would be like,
what was significant about Babel? Let's go back to Genesis. What was significant about Babel? This is just to get your mind thinking. We're not going
to
answer any questions exactly. Okay.
They wanted to get to heaven without God.
Reach your own effort.
They baked the bricks.
Okay, remember Nimrod.
It's like when she sits as a queen. Well, God is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And she sits as a queen. She wants to be similar to or be like.
Mm-hmm. Ellie, what did you say?
The Tower of Babel, when they were trying to reach to the heavens and be God,
be, like God,
be their own God.
Because Nimrod, remember what they said about Nimrod?
Man-made
he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, but it really means a mighty hunter against the Lord. The idea of Nimrod was basically, you could say, Nimrod's philosophy was in your face, God. So it was the rebellion against God and against God's purposes for the earth. The whole time, you know, such a small amount of time is spent talking about Babel, you know, the Tower of Babel, but it was very significant because not only were they in their face, in your face, God, but they were against God in every way. And so all that, they were idolatrous. What they were building was that ziggurat thing that was always, you know, idolatry. And so as they defied God, how did God respond to Babylon? To Babel, the Tower of Babel, and Nimrod and all that. He destroyed what they did, but what did he do to, how did he punish them? How did he, okay, he confused the language, because you think about it, back then, all languages, they all spoke the same language, right? It was all the same language, and he said, if they can do this, if being united, they can do what they're doing here, then what we need to, and it's to go. So he split them up, and they all had to start all over. They're all tossed out. It was a big deal. They were all pushed out of their homes, basically, because their languages separated them, and they all had to start all over again, and they were limited in what they could do. So it was a very big deal to have the languages confused. And so as we go along, and we see that in your face, God, who is behind all of that? Okay, Satan was behind all of that. And so that was the initial, after the flood, that was the initial rebellion against God. And it's been building and folding and adding all these years, hasn't it?
In this lecture today, Wayne takes it back even further, that this is the same general area where the Garden of Eden was, and that all sin originated there with the fall of Adam and Eve. So,
yeah, go
all the way back.
Yeah, for sure. Ruth?
We know this, that all nations began at Babel, but to see, this is the nation's origin. And when the nations come together at the end in Revelation, they're out for one thing, to get God's king.
Yeah, you're right. The nations, that was the beginning of the languages. That was the beginning of the nations. You're right. There we go. Yeah.
That was Wayne.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Good old Wayne. Be sure and stay for Wayne today.
But we know then, too, that out of Babylon came all that false religion. And with Nimrod, the mother and child, the idolatry, of there's always the mother and the child. And that was the Babylonian religion as it moved along. And, of course, in Babylon, Babylon was destroyed. Right? And or overcome. And when the Medes and the Persians took it over, they had their own religious system, so they ousted the Babylonian religion. Who picked up the Babylonian religion?
Greece.
Nope. Rome. It got enfolded to the Rome. The Romans took it up. When the church, we looked at church history a long time ago, last semester, we looked at church history, and we saw that there came a certain point when the church married who? Married the state. What was the state? Who'd they marry? It was the Roman government, wasn't it? Okay, Constantine. And when Constantine took over the church, what did he bring with him? All of that Babylonian idolatry came into the Roman church. So just think about those things, okay? Just think about them. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
I mean, almost think of, I mean, I go back to the obedience and disobedience, you know, the curse is a blessing, and Babylon is like Satan's world systems.
Yep.
And I keep thinking about when Lucifer rebelled in heaven. That was the, and took all his with him.
It's interesting, isn't it? I just thought of this when you said this, but you think about the description of the woman on the beast and her gold and her jewels and everything that's so beautiful about her, and how what's behind her is Satan. I think when he was, yeah, he was covered with jewels and just beautiful, beautiful. Like he's kind of transported that part of him into her, you know, laid that in. So very interesting.
It also, this is the answer to the souls that were praying, when will you avenge our blood, And he said, in a little while, and this is finally the answer. Mm-hmm.
From the beginning, pride and rebellion.
Yep.
And we're still stuck with it today. Mm-hmm. Even in our own lives, we live in a humanistic society that it's all about me, and it's so hard to get out of Babylon.
Satan knows how to make things attractive to us individually and as a group.
But what are we told to flee it, right? So that's what you're going to talk about in your small groups today. How does that actually work out? How do we do that? How do we do that? Anybody else have any comments or we stop?
This listing of all the characteristics of the merchants is very sensuous. You've got the hard marble. You hear the music. You see the crafts that the artisans have made. You smell. Yeah, just very, very
every
sensuous.
Sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Almost every sense is covered in that. The listing.
Yeah, it says they've made themselves rich off of her sensuality, right? Yeah. And you can imagine it.
Interesting.
So we really can't say anything else about that, but there's something good to think about. You think about these things. I think these are things that we can see that are here among us today, and if we are wise, we will understand. Well, we know that judgment is coming. Will come to the church first before it comes to the world, doesn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Starts with the household of God, and that's why we had the letters to the churches first, that God's saying, this is the problems that we see, repent. Mm-hmm. Of course, we don't believe the church will be on the earth at this point, so this is not talking about the church. Not the church, the true church. But will there be a church on this?
Yes.
There will be a church.
But we won't have any lampstand.
No, it won't be the one that has a lampstand. There will be a religious system on the earth in the end, but it will not be the true church. We don't see mention of the true church in this part of the book of Revelation. That will be being saved during that time. But as far as this is going to be an organized church that will be there. Okay, we need to stop and have small groups. You guys can chew all this over some more in your small groups.